Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, I'm presenting tonight because Catherine's just had a bit of a day, a bit of an exciting day, and so has got her feet up at the moment in the very chair that, 20 minutes earlier, Billie Jean, actual King, was sitting in whilst we watched the football. That's not a sentence I expected to be saying in my lifetime, Catherine.
With Billie Jean, actual dog, on her knee. It happened, yeah. It's hard to process, yes. But it was lovely.
Have you enjoyed it, Matt?
I mean, that is the most ridiculous question I've ever been asked. This might have been, was, I think, the greatest evening of my life. Billie Jean King
came round for a curry to watch the football. Amazing with Alana. And, it's just the best fun. And we've just spent 2 hours just watching England win 4-0 in the Euros to go into the semi-finals after a day of Wimbledon. And we've done it in the company of Billie Jean King, which is amazing. So let's talk about some tennis. And we'll tell you one or two things that Billie Jean told us about what went on today as well in the process, because it's been quite a day. And I'm going to start the day by talking about young Emma Raducanu. 18 years of age, from Great Britain. Before the tournament, I knew all about her in terms of who she was and that she's a very bright talent. And I'd spoken probably several years ago to Nigel Sears about her when she was, I think, probably only about 14, and he was working with her as a junior. 1 or 2 days a week during her school holidays and things like that, and during school as well. And he told me what a talent he thought she was. But when you get a breakout moment, and we had the same thing, 3 years younger with Coco Gauff 2 years ago. I wasn't prepared for this at all. And she got a wild card into this tournament very late on. She basically wasn't on the wild card list, and then they decided to give her one after the event at the last minute, because she, I think, had a good result against Tamea Babos, didn't she?
She got her wild card upgraded from a qualifying wild card to a main draw wild card, because there were a few spots untaken, and they were looking for likely contenders, and she did enough to prove herself worthy. And that looks like quite a good decision now, doesn't it? It would almost have been less surprising to me if this had happened a couple of years ago. 2 years ago, I was hearing the name Emma Raducanu a lot, just around British tennis. Her name was the one that always came up when you inquired about genuine prospects for the future. And then it all went quiet. And I know that coincided with a pandemic. So the world went a bit quiet in some respects. But, you know, I heard some rumblings about the fact that she was focusing on her studies, and maybe that was not a great decision, you know, that as much as it might be a sort of pragmatic decision, if you really want to make it, you can't afford to be pragmatic in that regard. But she's still only 18, And certainly Billie Jean King thought that was a good decision. She said her parents always put the emphasis on education. And yeah, suddenly she just popped back up into my consciousness. Anyway, so it's a very, I'm both really surprised and sort of not surprised all at the same time, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But it's the first time I've properly watched her play. I think I caught a little bit of her in US Open Juniors two and a half years ago. But this is the first time I've really sat down and watched her. And she's a great watch. It's easy on the eye tennis. It's really aesthetically pleasing tennis. It's great to watch.
Why? What, Matt, maybe you can help us with this a bit. Why is she so good to watch? If people haven't seen her, I mean, I was getting texts from my wife, from my mother, from my daughter, all just raving about her. But, I mean, from somebody who's watched a lot of tennis, what's special?
Well, listeners to this podcast will know I like a good backhand. And I also like to think I know a good backhand when I see one. And Emma Raducanu's backhand is a dream. I mean, Billie Jean King says, that backhand. it's not just the backhand. That's the shot which stands out. She hits so many winners off that today. I think the other thing which impressed me most was how much she appeared to love the stage. And that stage was Court 1 today. And look, I don't particularly enjoy the narrative around players sometimes when it's often said by a male commentator about female players, why aren't they smiling? I absolutely hate that when that gets said, but I think it's okay to comment on the fact that Raducanu appeared to be loving every single moment of this. She was smiling after hitting her winners. And I just think, you know, sometimes what you're looking for is something that isn't tangible with these players. And with her, it seemed to be an appreciation for the stage she was on and an ability to rise to that occasion. Look, she started the match well and was a breakdown. But I thought, well, she's playing well here. And then suddenly she had a surge like she had against Vondrosheva a few days ago. And I think today she won 7 or 8 games in a row in the middle portion of the match, and she sort of showed just how dominant her tennis can be. It's powerful tennis, it's great shot making, and there's so many winners. And then in the second set, she showed that she can be match tough as well, because there were some really long games. One in particular, I think, had 9 or 10 deuces, which she actually lost. And then she came out the next game and held her serve. So she seemed to really understand the dynamics of a match and how to compete. She kind of just showed everything today, and the Court 1 crowd absolutely loved her. It was a real moment, you know, a real hello, you know, kind of hello world kind of moment from her today, I think. It was amazing to watch.
I try to be a little cautious these days, having got carried away so many times over the years. But I feel reassured that I'm allowed to get carried away because of how much Billie Jean King was getting carried away in this very room an hour or so ago, talking about Emma Raducanu as somebody that she puts up alongside Coco Gauff as a rival for the future at the top end of the game. I'm not getting that wrong, am I, Catherine? That's what she said. That's what she believes.
Yeah. It would seem so. And look, I look at her game and I think I can't really see any weaknesses, but that's my eye. And, you know, see what we said about Jack Draper a few days ago. You know, the big test is going to be dropping down. It's okay. It's brilliant to have the taste for the big stage, but having that in tandem with the grit to perform on what's quite often the opposite of a big stage, that is a quite unique combination. I've got no reason to question that she has it. I just haven't seen proof that she has that yet. As far as I can tell, she's competition-wise, she's extremely inexperienced. As I said, she's been focusing on her studies the past year or two. So, of course, it all comes with caveats, but it sounds like she's got some pretty rare traits. It sounds like she's got some things that, you know, the greats, Billie Jean King, for example, don't see that often, or certainly don't see in combination that often.
That's what she was getting at,
and it's
isn't
so
it?
Striking, isn't it, that they just, the conviction they have when they see it. They just know when they're seeing it. It's incredible.
Billie Jean King was incredibly impressed with Raducanu's mentality. And, you know, she was on the BBC earlier, Billie Jean King, talking about how Raducanu has a point-by-point approach. And, you know, I think that can sometimes sound like a total cliche to us as onlookers and novices and people who don't play the sport. But for someone aged 18 to have that mentality and that idea that kind of every point she plays is her last, I think that's special. And I think Billie Jean King and others, I know Tracy Austin was commentating that match for BBC TV today, and she said, I've never seen her play before this tournament. And she was impressed, and she's someone who knows about, you know, making your breakthrough as a teenager. I think, you know, often hype can build around a player, but sometimes it's difficult to identify why someone is having great results. They're just having great results, and you therefore think, oh, well, they're going to be the next big thing. But greats of the game seem to specifically notice things with Raducanu that separate her from other players, and it's so exciting.
Well, she beat Saronika Kostea today, who is a very experienced, hard-working opponent who just did not give it to her at all. She pushed her, and I really like watching Kostea. I love how sporting she is afterwards as well.
I mean, she could just rock up on Monday to play the fourth-round match against Ida Chomilanovic, because they did look identical on the court today. It's possible that no one will notice.
Yes, the two players, you're right. You did have to look very closely to understand who was hitting the ball out of the two of them.
Same kit, same sponsor, visor, dark hair in identical plaits.
Yes. Well, my experience of the match, I've only just seen a few highlights just now, and my experience of the match as it was going on was being absorbed whilst commentating for BBC TV on Coco Gauff against Kaya Juvan. And so I had a tiny little picture of the Raducanu matchup in the commentary box at the same time as well. Plus, I'd got Dan Evans messaging saying Raducanu will win today at the start of the match. Then when she got a break, he repeats that with dot, dot, dot. And then he does it again half an hour later when she's won the first. And I can't reply to any of this. I'm commentating on another match. And then at the end, he goes, there you go. So afterwards, I did dial a Dan to find out what he thinks of her and why he was so convinced that she would win. This is what he had to say.
She's very good. She was one of the best at the Battle of the Brits, and so she's got, yeah, she's, and she wins her next match as well. Tomljanovic isn't beating Raducanu, I don't think.
See, he's on board with this now. He's a proper Tennis Podcast contributor. He's going on the record with takes and predictions.
Unsolicited ones.
Yeah,
unsolicited,
I didn't even ask for that.
But with a lot more gravitas.
Yes. It's interesting though, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if I get to go first with predictions on Monday, I'll just be copying Dialer Dan Evans. Why wouldn't you?
Well, we'll hear a bit more from him a bit later about his thoughts on yesterday and the match he had, etc. But just on Tomljanovic, she had a bit of a day today, didn't she? What went on with Ila Tomljanovic against Yelena Ostapenko?
Well, full disclosure, Matt and I did not tune into this until we were alerted to the occurrence of aggro.
Yes.
And then it drew our full attention.
You had three screens on it.
Yeah. I mean, people on all social media platforms were urgently alerting us to unfolding aggro.
Yeah.
Like a pager.
I want to thank Tennis Podcast listeners because they know how much we love aggro.
And I've always thought, really didn't disappoint.
I've always thought an app which tells you when a match is in a final set tiebreak would be useful, and an app which tells you when there's aggro happening in a match would be useful. Turns out just Tennis Podcast listeners will do that for you, so thanks to them.
So we tune in, and it's in a deciding set between Yelena Ostapenko and Ayla Tomljanovic, and Yelena Ostapenko has just conceded a double break to go down, I think, 4-love in the deciding set, and she calls the trainer. Now, I don't know if she... I don't. We hadn't watched a point before that stage, so I cannot vouch or otherwise for the validity of this trainer calling. But I can tell you what Ayla Tomljanovic's take on the trainer calling was, which was, you know she's lying, right?
She said to the umpire, are you taking into any consideration that she looks fine?
And by this point, Yelena Ostapenko has stomped to the chair and just sat down and said, I'm not playing. You've got to get me the trainer. She said, it's an abdominal injury. You can't see.
And she went off court for, I think it was 11 minutes overall, the medical timeout. They were one of these outside courts. She was gone for ages, and Tomljanovic was getting angrier and angrier.
You know she does this all the time, right? That sort of vibe.
And then Tomljanovic won the match, and the handshake was interesting. There were words exchanged.
I need to hear about this because I was on an emergency trip to an electrician's.
What was that for?
I was trying to get the flat Billie Jean King ready.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Required the electrician.
Matt, do you know what was said at the net?
Yes. I watched this and I have to say it did not disappoint. Because basically the match finished and Tomljanovic didn't shake Ostapenko's hand straight away, and Ostapenko was just standing there at the net like, are you going to shake my hand or what? And they eventually did shake hands, and Ostapenko said, your behavior is terrible, you have zero respect, to which Tomljanovic replied quite brilliantly, I must say, you're one to talk. And then it continued in the press conference. I think Ostapenko used the word disrespectful about Tomljanovic upwards of 10 times in the press conference.
And sometimes very disrespectful.
Sometimes it was very disrespectful.
Yeah, and there was also the quote. And I should say, if you want the full version of what went on here, do go to @tennispodcast on Twitter, because Hannah's work over the last 12 hours has been up there with Emma Raducanu on the tennis court. I can tell you that. And anyway, so she quotes Ostapenko here. Hold on a minute, let me just find it. As saying, let us also enjoy the following quote from Ostapenko. If I played at least 50%, I would have beaten her. So it's the injury, and then
that is taking. I just needed to be at my best to like a whole new level, isn't it? 50%.
Yeah, and then Tomljanovic then didn't back down in the press conference. She emphasised that it was the timing of the medical timeout that caused her to react, and is very honest about how some of her previous experiences might have fed into her reaction. She also called Ostapenko's behaviour disgraceful. So that was magnificent, and well played, Tomljanovic, who now faces Emma Raducanu on Monday. And so we've got lots to look forward to. What else happened today? I mentioned Coco Gauff. I watched her match in commentary.
Yeah, how was that?
It was really good. It was really good. I felt a bit sorry for Kaia Juvan just because it took her a while to get going. I felt the occasion got to her a bit, being on centre court, and she was sort of fall of down within very few minutes. 11 minutes, I think it was. But then you started to see what sort of player she is, and there's a real player there. There's somebody who uses variety and is quite an instinctive player. But the thing that struck me above all else was the speed of Coco Gauff. The balls she can get to that you think are out of her reach, it feels as though there is no way to hit a tennis ball that she can't reach. And that must be a horrible feeling for an opponent. I mean, I think Annabel Croft in our commentary, you said she shrinks the court. Wow. And we know certain players like Djokovic, like Murray at his very best, and Halep, and actually Kerber, who's going to be the next opponent of Coco Gauff. Imagine that match, Catherine.
Oh, I am. I have been.
That could be one of the matches of the round, really. Mm.
Yeah, Kerber.
And that's going to be on centre court. But, you know, that could be I can't imagine that not being a good match.
No, me neither. Kerber is the only player left in the women's draw who's reached the Wimbledon final. And she had a slightly strange match today. She was 5-1 down against Sasnovic, and then it started raining. And then when they came back from the rain delay, Sasnovic managed to finish off that first set, but then barely won another game in the entire match. And Kerber really seemed to have rediscovered her form from the other day. I think that could be both an excellent match and also pivotal to the way this tournament looks. The winner of that has a real, real chance, I think, of going seriously deep.
Yeah, I agree with you. Ash Barty was also in action today. She won over Katerina Siniakova, 6-3, 7-5. So, you know, good, another good win for her.
She looked really good.
Was it?
I didn't see all of it, but I thought she looked really good.
Yeah, the bits I saw, yet. I think she stepped it up. She hasn't been at her best this tournament. She probably still isn't, but definitely better signs from her against a dangerous opponent.
This is an interesting scoreline. 2.5 hours between Barbora Krejcikova and Anastasia Sevastova. 7-6, 3-6, 7-5.
I did watch some of that, and I think we've all been waiting, perhaps, for the match where Krejcikova hits the wall. And I thought this was the one today. She was taking pills in the first set. I don't think she was feeling particularly well, and yet she still managed to find a way through. And you're kind of thinking, well, if that's the match where she's had her dip and she still managed to get through it,
yeah, look out.
How are you going to beat her? You're kind of relying on her having another one, I suppose. I think her against Barty, two French Open champions whose games look tailor-made for grass as well, I think is fascinating.
Is that next?
That's in the fourth round, yeah. Barty Krejcikova.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I want to watch
it's
that.
It's not on centre court.
Where is it?
Court one.
Court one. Oh, I want to watch that. Okay, I'm watching that. I might be not commentating on it. I might be commentating on something else, which might make that slightly difficult. However, we've got catch-up. I'll figure it out.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. On the men's side, I'd actually like to start with Marin Cilic against Daniil Medvedev, which, when I left it, before I went to commentate on a mixed doubles match, it was two sets to love for Marin Cilic, 7-6, 6-3. And he looked fabulous. And I really was quite surprised to find out that Daniil Medvedev came back to win in five, coming back, I think, and winning from two sets to love down for the first time in his career. And those next three sets were 6-3, 6-3, 6-2.
Well, this match was on the telly when Billie Jean and Alana arrived tonight, and Medvedev had just broken in the third set. And I think it was Alana, Matt, that said, Medvedev's got this. Billie Jean was saying what a fan she is of Medvedev. And Alana said, yeah, I think Medvedev's winning this. And I thought, wow, that's an early call to sound that confident about it. But lo and behold, it was, you know, it was like quicksand beneath Marin Cilic, and it was, I mean, I'm really pleased for Medvedev and my predictions, but yes, it's Cilic seemed to have found something from the past this tournament, so to see it ebb away was a little bit sad, I suppose.
Yeah.
But
then. Even in the past, I can think of a couple of two-set leads he's blown at Wimbledon. Apparently, there was a funny Medvedev incident in the match where he asked the umpire if they could do something about the sun.
Yes, I can regale you with what Hannah's had to say, which is Medvedev said, I have sun in my eyes, full sun in my eyes. Can we do something? Do something about the sun? And then he goes. This was a series of events in set five. Medvedev walks to the baseline, waves hands, jogs to umpire, demands action. Read the sun. Jogs back to the baseline. Jogs back to the chair. I'm sorry. I just need a cap. Jogs back to the baseline. Plays one point. Jogs back to the chair. Removes cap. And breaks. Oh, that's fantastic. And he won the match. Did Daniil Medvedev. So well done him. Who's he play now?
He now plays Hubert Hurkacz.
Oh. Who beat Bublik today.
And I think came into Wimbledon on a 5 or 6 match losing streak. Since,
yeah. Oh, it's been torrid since Miami.
Since Miami, he's really struggled. I didn't think he would be a factor here at all. And yet he's had some really good wins.
His name in the draw, quite honestly.
Yes. Okay.
Very impressive.
They will face on Monday. We'll move on to Roger Federer, who got the job done today, 6-4, 6-4, 5-7, 6-4 over Cameron Norrie. And I saw the last two sets of this, and from what I understand, Federer was awesome for two sets, and then things started to go awry. And I mean, Norrie being quite a big part of that. Anybody see any of that?
Yes, we saw quite a lot of this one. I think I was surprised, actually, by how affected Norrie seemed to be for the first two sets. I thought this would be his sort of occasion. As an underdog, playing against someone ranked much higher than him, I'm going to say pressure's off, but I suppose being on centre court as the Brit, there was quite a lot of pressure, and perhaps that was part of it. But he seemed really off his game to me in the first couple of sets, and Federer was just on cruise control, you know, that classic thing, one break, win the set, And it looked like he was going to do that in the third set as well. He had break points at 5-all. Even though Norrie had started to play better, I just thought Federer was going to pinch the set and, you know, it would be a very routine straight sets win against an opponent who wasn't really troubling him. But when he didn't take those break points, the atmosphere changed a little bit on centre court and Federer was made to be really unsure of himself, I felt, for a little period in that match. And Norrie played a big part in that, in terms of just not going away, sticking with him, making him uncomfortable, putting doubt in his mind and getting the crowd up. There was a moment where, you know, Norrie really sort of orchestrated the crowd to make more noise and get behind him. And it was kind of un-Norrie-like, but he backed it up because he won that third set. And then in the fourth set, I was thinking this could be really problematic for Federer. He seems unsure of himself. His opponent is improving as we go on. So for him to get it back, Federer, and find his tennis again and win that fourth set with some really excellent play and shot making, I think will do him a lot of good in the end to have come through a test like that.
Yeah, I thought the same. I thought it was getting really dicey when Norrie won that third set.
It was all going a bit Milman, wasn't it?
Yeah, John Milman, US Open, and even I thought it would end up being like John Milman in the Australian Open, actually. I thought it would end up being nail-biting, horrible experience for Federer fans, but he ends up winning and diminishing his canister along the way.
Mm.
And yet, I think he's come out of it probably in a really good place now because he's weathered that difficult patch and his shot-making has come back. And there's not that many matches in recent years where I feel like that's happened in a tight match where his shot making has come back and just accelerated him away.
Yeah, it's true. Usually when it of late, when it's gone, it's, you know, by and large gone or certainly sort of hanging on for it. Yeah, absolutely right. Exactly what you said. I think it's nothing but positivity, really. For Federer, because that's exactly the sort of situation that he doesn't like, especially at this stage of his career. Cam Norrie's a scrapper, he's a street fighter, he makes it ugly. Federer doesn't want to play ugly tennis, he doesn't want to get drawn into that, and Cameron Norrie really tried to drag him into it and he resisted.
Yeah, I think he was a bit late, Norrie, to come to the party today. And some of that's Federer, some of that's his elan playing this tennis, which you can't get down and dirty against if he's that good. But he managed it eventually, and I think he just left it a bit too late, really. Might learn a few things from that. But Federer goes through. We've got a real disappointment that was going on meanwhile, over on court one, following the Raducanu match, the match I think many of us have been looking forward to the most almost in that round, which was Nick Kyrgios against Felix Auger-Aliassime. Kyrgios started all jolly. He forgot his tennis shoes. He joked about it. He got his basketball shoes on. He said, oh, the one time I'm professional and I don't bring my shoes. Oh, it's all fun. And it was funny. And then he played like a dream. He won the first set 6-2. Felix looked tense. And then in the second set, Kyrgios pulled a stomach muscle, trailed away in the set. And at the end of that second set, he had to stop. And yeah, I mean, I think probably it's the inevitability of just not being match tough because of lack of training, lack of tennis.
Yeah, I think we've seen the benefits mentally for Kyrgios of being fresh and not having played much and just, you know, in his words, being kind of a part-time tennis player. He's been in a great space, it seems, this tournament, and that's been great to see and watch. But physically, you can't just rock up to a Grand Slam having played no tennis for 5 months and expect your body to hold up, I suppose, to the rigours of it. And
a bit like Australia, where they all went into quarantine for a couple of weeks and then they were all pulling stomach muscles after it.
Yeah, it makes me feel really naive for everything that I've said up until this point about Nick Kyrgios, which is nothing new. Because I was totally sold on the concept of part-time tennis player Nick Kyrgios, and he really sold me on it, and I thought that was a really great sort of reconciliation of everything about Nick Kyrgios, and a way for him to be a professional tennis player and for us to understand him and appreciate him as a professional tennis player without being frustrated with him all the time. But I had done tennis a disservice in that assessment, and just what a demanding, high octane sport it is on a physical level, and how fine the margins are, and how you just can't get away with being, no matter what your talent level, out of shape and out of practice. And as much as I love the dream of part-time tennis player Nick Kyrgios that rocks up at a Grand Slam and has a run and has magical moments, ending it in that way does detract from the magic of the moments that precede it, I think.
Oh, for sure.
Mm. Yeah.
100%.
I do think there probably is a balance to be found, though. I mean, he's not really been a part-time tennis player this year. He's been a no-time tennis player. I think he could do that with just a few more tournaments sprinkled in.
You telling me my dream might still be alive.
I'm reviving it for you, Catherine.
Thank you
very much.
It's
not dead yet.
We're going to have an endless quest for the balance that you are seeking until he stops playing altogether.
Great. Because I'm okay with him not, you know, trying to be world number one and win slams and do this thing week in, week out. You know, I know some people get so frustrated with, you know, he owes it to his talent and everything. And I do understand that, but I personally am okay with that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are, really, that are Kyrie optimists. But almost in unison, our guests tonight, Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss, I'm going to keep saying that, said, but you have to pay the price.
Yeah.
In training and getting ready physically for this stuff, you have to pay the price. You can't just take shortcuts if you want to succeed. It's not just about, okay, you might be all right with not ending up world number one or winning multiple. If you want to win any of them, you can't just blag it.
Yeah.
No matter how good you are.
Yeah, I mean, this is the most pitiful example and comparison, but I have a rehab regime at the moment from my physio, who works with a lot of tennis players, and it's half an hour a day, and it makes me want to cry. It just makes me think, maybe I'll just sort of get a wheelchair. Like, it's, you know, it's only half an hour a day, but it's a glimpse into that paying the price. It's a glimpse into what Andy Murray's putting himself through for hours a day just to have the chance to compete on centre court. The turns of phrase like that are, you hear them a lot, and just to have sort of a glimpse into first-hand experience of it is quite something.
The way they say it, though, and because of who they are, particularly Billie Jean King, you know, you just, you know instantly that is a real live thing that we have to take seriously.
There's a woman that's done single leg squats.
Oh, yeah. Matteo Berrettini, straight sets winner over Aliosh Bedonet, and from, I saw him briefly afterwards, just walking by, and he just sort of, I didn't have a chat, I don't know him, I just saw him, but he looked happier than he did the previous round, where it was all about relief when he got past Mr. Botik van der Zandschulp. which I'm going to keep having a go at. Alexander Zverev beats Taylor Fritz in four sets, coming back from a set down.
I mean, Fritz won a set in that.
Yeah, he was in a surgery 3 weeks ago.
I mean,
how's he managed that?
I'm so confused by how he's done this.
I don't understand Taylor Fritz's career at all, really, and this is just another chapter of that misunderstanding.
Totally. And Zverev now plays Orju Aliassim, and he has a really good record against Orju Aliassim. He's barely dropped games, let alone sets, in their two or three matches so far. And
that's a record that Orju Aliassim could do with curtailing.
Because they're going to play.
Because they are going to keep playing, and those records can get away from you.
I think Felix has got to play a lot better than he's playing right now if he's going to do that. I think so too. He doesn't look...
When it was a match against Kyrgios before the injury, he was comprehensively outplayed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was. Okay, well, I think that's a review of the day. I mentioned Darling Nadan, and I feel like
Dan.
You know, let's
leave roads to Darling Daniil open, please.
Okay, well, we'll dial this Dan that we know. for now, even though he's out of the tournament. He makes no bones about it. He was comprehensively beaten in the end. I mean, although he led that fourth set, did Evans, and I think that there are probably a few regrets there. I think generally he just feels like he didn't play the way he could play. But it's a special player in prospect, I think, anyway, that beat him in Seb Korda, and we talked about that. But one of the things that I wanted to know was, where do you sleep well after a match like that? You know, and what frame of mind you're in the next morning when you wake up?
No, I slept fine. So tired after the match. Overriding feeling this morning, so I've got a hell of a lot of packing to do, a hell of a lot, and 25 minutes to do it in.
So there we are.
Your follow-up question to that was absolutely not the follow-up question that I would have asked, which was, why the urgent time limit?
Well, I said to him afterwards, where are you going?
Well, obviously home.
Yeah, I know, but...
You didn't ask about the sort of...
Well, he said you don't want to be bouncing around the tennis tournament after you've just lost.
Okay,
you
sure,
just want to become a non-tennis player.
What's the difference between 25 and 45?
I think he booked a car.
Right,
and then he'd not given himself enough time to catch it.
Yeah. I mean, if I had 25 minutes to pack, I would not be doing voice notes with you, David.
They're quite appealing, let's be honest.
I do them in the car afterwards.
Just on the on a packing tangent, that was one of the really charming lines that Emma Raducanu had after, when she said she was packing for the tournament, obviously to go into a bubble, and her parents remarked that she had packed an optimistic number of match kits. They said, oh, that's too many.
Brilliant. Oh, that's marvellous. Okay, well, let's just have a little look at the order of play for, wait for it, Monday, because we've got the day off tomorrow.
Overwhelming Monday is what we're calling it. Yes. Too much Monday.
Too much Monday.
Matches that shouldn't be on court three being on court three Monday.
Yeah, and there is some disappointment, I think, at some of the assignments. There always is. I think, you know, you're always going to get arguments anyway about this particular day because there are too many matches for the number of show courts they've got. But it is a bit of a blow, I think, to see once again the men's matches dominating, really, on the three show courts overall. I'll read out the order of play to you. It starts at 1:30 on centre court, Novak Djokovic against Christian Garin. Then it's Coco Gauff against Angelique Kerber, which, I mean, if it lives up to its potential, it could be one we're talking about for many years to come. Roger Federer against Lorenzo Sonego is after that. And then over on court one, it starts with Ash Barty against Barbora Krejcikova, which is one I very much want to see. Felix Auger-Aliassime against Alexander Zverev follows that. Then it's Emma Raducanu against Ayla Tomljanovic, which I am a bit surprised isn't on centre court. Catherine, are you not?
Well, just because to put of the that story, on, I just don't think they were ever contemplating not putting Federer and Djokovic on centre. I think their starting point for decision making was which one women's match are we putting on centre?
I do disagree with that. I think that they should have put Federer on court one.
I'm not arguing that. I'm saying that was their starting
point. No, I agree with you.
I think putting Federer on court one this year hasn't been an option because I suspect they're probably... This is not from any intelligence at all. This is probably how I would be thinking if I were a member, someone on at the All England Club responsible for scheduling. This could well be his last Wimbledon and you don't want him playing his last match on court number one, and there have been no guarantees in any round about Roger Federer. So I think they're taking no risks with Roger Federer. Djokovic, they've scheduled him once on court number one, and it was absolutely the right decision to do so yesterday with his match against Kudla. And I think they think that's the limit. I think both of those matches could and possibly should be on court number one.
I think it'd be wrong to give Djokovic two matches on court one if you've not given any to Federer. I agree
about the balance, but just those two individual matches, absolutely no reason why can't be on court, either or both can't be on court one.
Yeah, it comes down to this thing of when scheduling gets complicated and there are understandable reasons why it's complicated, in tennis it's always the women that get shunted.
That's it. There are understandable reasons. There are justifications. But as you say, when the going gets tough, it's the women that get going.
Number two court, Iga Świątek against Ons Jabeur. I mean, I hate Manic Monday.
Me too.
We don't get to see so many matches. Mm-hmm. And look, at least Wimbledon's understood it. And I know some people say, well, I love it. I go watch them all. Well, fine, okay, that's up to you. I don't. I'm looking forward to next year when these matches are spread over 2 days. And okay, I'm going to be a mess trying to not having my day off in the middle, but that doesn't matter. I want to see Iga Świątek against Ons Jabeur. I want to see Barbora Krejcikova against Ash Barty. They're both at the same time, and I can't watch them all. And then there's Martin Fucsovics against Andrei Rublev. There's Hubert Hurkacz against Daniil Medvedev. Number three court is Elena Rybakina against Aryna Sabalenka. Denis Shapovalov against Roberto Bautista Agut. Doubles. Nick Kyrgios and Venus Williams are in supposed mixed doubles action.
Yeah. That's a big
if.
Big if.
Kyrgios was said in... was already in dressing, impressed the prospects of having to tell Venus.
Yeah.
That.
I mean, look, he can't play mixed doubles after what happened today. I don't think. I think it'd be wrong.
Underarm serve your way through.
Matteo Berrettini against Ivashka of Belarus.
That might be the only way that doubles could get cooler.
Karolina Pliskova against Ludmila Samsonova of Russia. Paola Badosa against Karolina Muguva. I want to watch that as well.
What court's that on?
Court number 12. Court 18, Karen Khachanov against Seb Korda. Madison Keys against Victoria Golubich. Okay, well, this needs to change. It is going to change. It's going to change next year. So, thank you to everybody for listening. Thank you to Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss for coming and visiting us and helping England to win. We are currently watching the highlights for the fourth time on a loop in a row. And it is 4-0 still. And it's all because Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss came over and visited. So we are campaigning for them to return for the next match. But it was an absolute treat.
It was
to
a
have
hoot.
Them here. And Catherine and Matt were perfect hosts, and I just swanned in halfway through and ate all the food and drank all the beer, which is great, and enjoyed the conversation. And we are executive produced by Chris Albert Lee. Our individual mascots are Rogue for myself, and we got ourselves a nice 25 points for Emma Raducanu doing the business today. Matt is sponsored by the lovely Scousal Mousel. Catherine is sponsored by the wonderful Zeus.
He might want to be distancing himself from me, frankly.
Billie Jean has been hanging out with Billie Jean
yeah.
together tonight.
Content available via our social channels.
Oh, yes. It's coming your way. Get on the newsletter. If you haven't signed up already, go down in the show notes on your phone right now. You can sign up to the newsletter. You can support the tennis podcast if you'd like.
Mocha.
Mocha is our mascot for Wimbledon. And Mocha's a belter. We've got a picture of Mocha on our Instagram channels, thanks to Catherine, who's looking after Instagram this fortnight. I think we might even have a shout-out or two, Matt.
Always. We have Lindsay Maxwell.
Right, Lindsay.
Hello, Lindsay.
Marvellous name.
Like Lindsay Vaughan and... Lindsay Davenport, yes.
Lindsay Vaughan's a skier, right?
Skier, yes. Oh, great skier.
I went sport.
Yeah.
Just not tennis, yeah. That's
very good.
We have Jeremy Matum.
Right, Jeremy.
Oh.
Like Bates.
Bates. Yeah, we both went Bates there.
I was going to go Shardy.
Do you remember the days? No, you don't remember the days. You weren't alive, Matt, when Jeremy Bates was knocking around going to the fourth round. Oh, well. Those are the days.
Hey, he's coaching Emma Raducanu now.
It's been a big week for
him. Big week for Jeremy.
Part of the team, yeah. Part of the team with Nigel Sears up there in the box. Mm. Cool. Yeah. Right, who else?
And we have Val Chisholm.
Like Melanie Chisholm.
Who's that?
Mel C from the Spice Girls.
Oh, is it?
Oh.
Yeah.
I never knew that. And that's how many years have I been thinking that C was a full surname?
Yeah, Val C, Mel C.
Brilliant. So thank you to Val, to Lindsay, to...
Jeremy.
I've remembered you. We're hugely appreciative for all your support because, frankly, you know, we're sat here at well after midnight and the reason we do it is because... You all listen because you've supported us, and it's worth it. What can I say? We love it, but we really appreciate it. So we'll be back with more of this stuff for several more days after Middle Sunday at Wimbledon. But for now, I'm going to bed. See you on Monday.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.